Great to have you with us on WPIR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to start the program today by talking a little about outdoor recreation and our environment. Outdoor recreation is hugely important to Wisconsin, the state of Wisconsin. It's in the billions of the state's gross national product, and it all comes from the outdoor recreation industry. And with so many businesses, tourists, and residents relying on outdoor recreation for their livelihoods or for, well, their recreation, the potential implications of our changing climate could be very substantial. We're going to be talking about that changing climate, tourism, and outdoor recreation with three folks. Natalie Chin and Austin Holland are with the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts. Natalie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
And Austin, great to have you as well. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
With us as well is Crystal Westfall. She's the president and CEO of the Minocqua Area Visitors Bureau. Crystal, welcome to you.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
Spent a lot of time in the Minocqua area. See, the third week of September, I and three other guys went up and we stayed at a hotel. We golfed 5 days on five different courses. And we're interested in the supper clubs of the area as well. So we had a really good time there. Great to have you here. As we move along today, not talk about my golf trip, but talk about recreation in general here, I hope you'll join in. How has the weather changed maybe your outdoor recreation traditions? Are you worried about certain outdoor activities disappearing, perhaps? How have maybe safety precautions changed as our favorite outdoor pastimes are evolving? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. You know what? Let's start by talking about the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts. What's the history of that group? Austin, you want to take that? Or Natalie, either one.
As I Natalie can take that one. She's been in for a lot longer.
So. Natalie, you're the pro on that. Let's go to you. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk a little bit about WICI as we sort of shorten the name to make it a little easier. So WICI actually started back in 2007 as a partnership between the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and the Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And the Nelson Institute had actually been approached by several state legislators who wanted to understand how climate change is impacting the state and their constituents. And then DNR staff wanted to understand impacts on the state's natural resources so they could make better management decisions. So those two groups came together, started with about 40 UW-Madison and state agency scientists. And that group quickly grew to include folks from other organizations and networks from across the state, and still exists today. They published a report back in 2011, their first assessment report, that really talked about how climate change is impacting the state now and could in the future, with the goal of really providing information to help foster solutions in the state. And published a second assessment report in 2021 and are looking to publish a update to that report in the upcoming year.
So we've got a bunch of data collected and you're going to be reporting on the latest. And we look at snowfall, you can look at rainfall, you can look at temperatures, you can look at lake ice cover. Are all these trends alarming, or I mean, what's the status?
Yeah, I think the high level message is really that Wisconsin is getting warmer, wetter, and more extreme. And then there's, of course, there's nuance in that data that you can dig into if you visit the Wiki website, which is wicci.wisc.edu. And so, you know, there's a lot more information and detail about what has been seen historically as in measured data, as well as what climate models are suggesting might happen in the future. You know, it's different a little bit between seasons and where you are in the state. But yeah, the big level, the high level message is really warmer, wetter, and more extreme for Wisconsin's climate.
Yeah. Austin, what do you think the overall impacts of these changes for our state?
Yeah, I think dovetailing off of what Natalie said, I think it really just depends on where you are, what you do for a living, and what season, you know, you like to recreate in or whatever sector you work within. I think what's really cool about Wiki is that we've actually broken up into a lot of different subgroups. We've got everything from agriculture to community sustainability, and then we're the outdoor recreation and tourism working group. And so you got a lot of really great people working on a variety of different topics, really trying to understand this global phenomenon and trying to see how it impacts our state in different ways.
Well, Christo, how much money does outdoor recreation contribute to Wisconsin's overall economy? I know it's in the billions.
Billions with a B, for sure. It is one of the main catalysts for tourism and travel, specifically to the Northwoods. I mean, that's our bread and butter. If outdoor recreation and all types of weather. And so we're definitely seeing changes in how people are traveling here, when they're traveling here, and how they're recreating when they're here due to those changes. It's been a really interesting decade that I've been in this position, seeing it firsthand and seeing how the travel and tourism industry has been slowly trying to adapt to this kind of new reality.
Yeah. So what are for your area, what are some of the changes and how are the adaptations being made?
Well, most notably, I mean, and this was across the state of Wisconsin, but two no snow years incredibly impacted the Northwoods. We're still able to do quite a variety of salad sports, but when we are so dependent on a snowmobiling economy to really give us that boost through the winter to keep our small businesses alive, that was probably the biggest catalyst to seeing changes within our you know, our economy here, our demographic, who the people are that are coming here. We are definitely seeing changes in the summertime, in you know, what kind of weather we're receiving. It's the unpredictability of it that is really starting to change the way people travel and plan for travel.
Yeah, I was thinking about that golf trip I took. It was the third week of September, and it was like perfect weather conditions and something that you would have expected maybe earlier in the month or in the month before, but it was kind of perfect for golf.
Well, and our Septembers are a great indicator too. I mean, we have a festival actually the following weekend, the fourth weekend in September, that we have seen snow, sleet, hail, rain, and 90-degree weather. You know, in this, like, again, the decade that I've been here, the changes in our fall seasons have been quite noticeable.
Maggie in Hudson has a comment for us or question, I believe. Let's go there. Maggie, hi. Thank you for calling. Maggie, are you there?
I am here, yeah.
What's on your mind?
Well, I'll tell you, I am one of the owners of the Badlands Snow Tubing Cart up in Hudson, Wisconsin. And we're gearing up for our holiday coming up. And, you know, with the climate changing, we are spending a ton more money investing in snowmaking equipment, the cost and the labor involved in making the snow. Just, you know, people are pretty appreciative of what we do, but sometimes they don't realize the expense and the back work that goes into making the facility work.
Yeah, I'm seeing some nodding heads in agreement there. Natalie, maybe you can chime in.
Yeah, and Austin can fill in with what I missed, but we actually did a study last year, well, it was published last year, about how climate change is impacting downhill ski areas around the state, and really did see a heavy reliance on snowmaking and the impacts of sort of the less predictability, as others had mentioned, with winter, and how that is affecting folks who are operating these areas. And yeah, one of the major adaptations, of course, is snowmobiling, and then of course that, or not snowmobiling, I'm sorry, snowmaking, and of course the expense that is having on businesses.
Austin, to add anything there?
Yeah, snowmaking was the number one kind of thing mentioned by all of our participants that agreed to participate in the study. Another thing was really that grooming of the hills, the additional labor, and then also to the additional expenses of planning technology to see more advanced forecasting for snow and precipitation data. They were really kind of initially had invested in snowmaking as kind of a really, you know, business decision to enhance what they offered, and then really are relying on it in the last few years to really make sure that they have snow to have, so that people can have those experiences that they're expecting. But it does take a lot of work than it used to.
Yeah. What is it, just offhand, what does snowmaking equipment cost? Maybe Maggie knows that. Maggie, what'd you spend on snowmaking equipment?
Oh, boy. Well, one of the last machines we bought, it's portable. It was $55,000 for one machine. And then you also need the infrastructure, either electrical three-phase or generators to run the machines. So yeah, it's not cheap.
Oh, no. Yeah, it takes a lot of snow tubes going down the hill to pay for $55,000 for the snowmaking machine plus. Thank you for calling and raising that as an issue, Maggie. I appreciate it very much. And you can join in, too. Maybe you have a question or a comment. I hope you will. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here as we take a look at climate impacts on Wisconsin recreation with our three guests, Natalie Chin and Austin Holland, two members of the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts on Tourism and Outdoor Recreation Working Group. Woo! No wonder you call it Wiki. For short. Also with us, Crystal Westfall, president and CEO of the Minocqua Area Visitors Bureau and a member of Governor Tony Evers' Task Force on Climate Change. Questions or comments for them? Again, join us at 800-642-1234. You could email to talk@WPR.org. Michael emailed us, do your reports and the work you do identify the amount of greenhouse gases and each economic activity contributes to the atmosphere? Do you identify how they can reduce their polluting emissions? Is that something you look at, Natalie?
That's a great point. And it's not something that we look at extensively. Wiki, we're mostly focused on adaptation, so strategies that folks can use to sort of respond to the impacts that we're having on climate change. But I think that's a great point that we also need to understand what levels of greenhouse gas emissions we're seeing. We know with tourism, a big component of that is air travel. And so tourism is seen as a big contributor to climate change globally. So I think that point is very well taken, that that would be a good area for future research. And knowing that those numbers, it would be great.
Somebody mentioned silent sports, and John emailed to wonder, what are silent sports? Austin, you want to take that?
Anything that is not motorized. We're definitely looking at cross-country skiing and fat tire biking in the winter, snowshoeing. Sledding, those are all, you know, non-motorized opportunities. And then just their counterpart in the summertime, canoeing, kayaking, that type of thing.
Yeah. Maybe if focus a little more on winter. Can you talk about the impact of less ice cover and the ice road between Bayfield and Madeline Island as examples? Crystal, do you want to take that?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely part of our tourism landscape as well. We do, you know, several ice events, you know, ice fishing events. We've got, you know, pond hockey, which is incredibly popular. We have American pond hockey event that happens here. And even last year, it was a little bit risky trying to figure out how we were going to put all these people onto ice that may not be thick enough. Not to mention the fact that a lot of our snowmobile trails do cross lakes, rivers, and streams. And we're looking to, you know, make sure that those swamps are frozen, that the lakes are frozen before we can even open snowmobile trails. So we really need to have up here a very, very cold, quick cool down in November and December. We want the ground to freeze. We want those lakes to freeze over before we start getting that snow. And so when we start getting snow early, it actually creates an insulation layer on that ice and that ice can't build. So it's sort of a little magic wand. We need to wave over everything and say, we want ice first, then we want snow next. This year, we're a little bit kind of both. We've got snow and we've got ice. Up here, famously, we have two really big things we build. One's a snowman that's 30 feet tall in Minocqua, and Eagle River has an ice castle they build. It's kind of a unicorn year when we can have both of those things. This year, it happens to be that we're going to be building both of those fun roadside attractions because we have kind of the right mix. But we definitely need it to get cold, and we need it to stay cold. Now, yesterday was 30 degrees when we were building a snowman, and that's actually pretty warm for us. We want it to be in those teens to sub-zero temperatures so that we can have everything freeze. So we need the cold. We definitely need the cold, and we need people to be resilient to that cold.
Yeah, I think we're coming up in the next few days in the southern part of the state. Madison area is going to be into the 40s, and rain is predicted, which makes for slippery conditions, as I can verify, as I took one step out of off my porch this morning and quickly found myself on my back and with a sprained wrist. So, enough about my problems. So how do you deal with it is what I mean, you just say, is it like farming? Yeah, sort of, you know, all right, we're going to deal with the weather, whatever happens.
It's funny you say that, Larry, because when we had our two no snow winters, our organization and a bunch of other destination marketing organizations and chambers up here in the north banded together to encourage, would be a good word to put it, our elected officials to find ways to give our small businesses some sort of loan opportunity. And we used farming as that example. When there are drought years for farmers, they're able to have some support and loan opportunities. And we were able to change the SBA's loan possibilities for our small businesses because we had drought years. Unfortunately, that looks like it's going to be the new norm, potentially, that we're going to have drought years. And so, yeah, we need to encourage travelers to travel regardless of whether there's snow, and maybe encourage them to try new opportunities of outdoor recreation. And we are just trying to gain as much ground as we can and be as impactful up front. We know what's coming, so we're trying to make moves now to adjust how we talk about travel and tourism in the Northwoods.
Yeah. Karen in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I'm calling. You had a caller talk about the footprint of winter sports and sports on climate change. And I was struck by the fact, I'm wondering if your associations are at all signing on to court cases, taking the oil industry to court for knowingly polluting since God knows only when, 1950s, whenever they started burning fuels, and for the damages that it's caused and it's going to continue to cause, and they have the money. I mean, they, and we've fought wars to keep providing oil for these very rich people, and we're on the verge of going to war in Venezuela for the very same reason.
Well, I think I've got the gist here, Karen. I don't believe, well, let me just put it to Natalie. Can you respond to Kieran's comment about lawsuits and such against industries?
Yeah, I mean, all I can really say is, you know, as a university entity, that's not really something that we participate in. So the short answer is no. We do not participate in those kinds of things.
Willem and Koufax also just commented that some lawmakers are ignoring climate change, and that's holding us back from making real progress on curbing its effects, Austin.
Yeah, and I would say the main focus of Wiki is adaptation. So we're trying to help with it. Whatever subgroup that we're working within, we're really focused on, okay, we understand that these impacts are coming to these sectors. It's impacting our stakeholders and the people we're working with across the state differently. How can we support them in transitioning in meaningful ways to hopefully, in terms of our group, our focus is to help those folks to make sure that we can continue to have those outdoor recreation experiences into the future, even though it might look a little bit different going forward. So
let's look at summer for a minute, too. What do you I think in the report there said something that says the summer season is becoming donut shaped. Are we eating more donuts? No, I'm sure that's not what is meant there.
We might be eating more donuts. I wouldn't mind that. But no, that is really referring to sort of participation in outdoor recreation in the summer, because we're going to see more extreme heat. And so folks sort of in the middle of summer may choose not to participate in outdoor activities just because of the sort of unpleasant conditions when you have heat and threats to sort of related to heat illness and that kind of thing. So we may see more participation in outdoor recreation sort of shifting to, we sometimes call them shoulder seasons, so the fall and spring, but less in the middle of summer. And that could depend. People might just choose to be inside instead of outside. So that's what we're kind of talking about.
Yeah, Crystal, is that something you guys are worried about?
I don't think we're worried about people not traveling. We, as the Minocqua area likes to call ourselves, is we're the Lakeland area. We're in the Northern Highland American Legion State Forest region. And so we have all of our water kind of falls from the sky and is in these lovely deep lakes. We are seeing increases in blue-green algae blooms. So our lakes are warming, and we're certainly seeing that in those blooms. But we are still seeing tourists flocking to the Lakeland area, maybe to beat the heat. You know, they're looking to get out in the water. And so that's our concern, though, is just making sure that water is safe for them to be recreating in. I don't necessarily see it being impactful for us in the summertime, but I do see us having more travelers coming specifically in the fall right now. We don't necessarily have a shoulder season in that. Our spring is still really unpredictable, though, and it feels like an elongated mud season. So hard for people to recreate in the mud season, right? And so that's been a change that we've been noticing here.
Ed, you mentioned the Northern Highlands area, the Northern Highlands Forest Reserve, and I just saw this morning a story coming out of an article in Conservation Science and Practice, and they're looking worldwide at climate safe havens that could be one of the Earth's best defenses against global warming, and in protecting areas in the world that are could be safe havens for this. And one of the areas mentioned for the United States was the Northern Highlands Forest Reserve, which is, what do we got, 232,000 acres, something like that, across three counties. as one of those areas that could become crucial, a crucial climate refuge on the road. I don't know if you guys have seen that article in Conservation Science and Practice, but it was really an interesting article, and with a specific mention of the Northern Highlands Forest in Wisconsin as serving.
Interestingly enough, we actually just had a conversation with somebody who talked about that when they made their decision where they were going to retire. And coming from the Florida region, in Florida, they were trying to kind of escape what they were perceiving as a climate crisis, and came to the Northwoods for that particular reason, because they thought this would be the most resilient area. And that study has been talked about for quite a while. I'm interested to read that article you just mentioned, though, because it's a new one for me.
Yeah, it's a pretty extensive article, because they're talking about the whole world and spots around the world that could serve as refuges. So maybe do you think there's a bright side? It sounds a little bit, Crystal, like there's maybe a kind of a bright side to some of this.
Well, I mean, with the 230,000 acres plus that we have here, I mean, it is definitely a carbon sink. I mean, that's where we're looking to try and, claim back a lot of that global warming issue. We want to keep our forests green, and we want to make sure that they're continuing to thrive too. So I think our foresters have done a wonderful job managing the forest timber that we have here, and I do see our area as being a little bit of a refuge for that, just simply because of what we have here, our natural resources.
So there's
definitely bright sides to a lot of this conversation. I hate to always think about it as doom and gloom. We just have to learn how to adapt and mitigate any further damage. But we're at the point of an adaptation in our area right now.
How do you think the other areas of the state are doing in that regard? Do we have any?
I think everybody's talking about. I mean, specifically in tourism, we're definitely talking about how we adapt for changing outdoor recreation, and we're seeing different types of developments happening to allow people to recreate indoors. They have a new dome in Rhinelander that was stood up a few years ago that helps, with school sports and recreating, in a green space under a dome. So there's ways that communities are adapting to this and, addressing it. And they may not call it climate change. That might not be the reason that they're looking at it, but they're definitely starting to adapt to what they're seeing in their outside world. So, I see some bright sides to it. And I do think that, the resiliency of the people of Wisconsin it's on full display right now.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned lakes earlier, and one thing I think as part of that report had to do with lake levels, they're becoming, what shall we say, more unpredictable.
That's a really good way to say it. Yes, especially being in the lake district that we are very prone to, lake levels decreasing due to drought. Because again, like nothing really flows into us. We're the highlands, so everything falls from the sky. We collect it. And when we don't have a lot of rain and quite frankly, a lot of snow, our lake levels shift. And we are seeing that. I mean, in the past decade, we've seen shifting quite frequently, and you can see it just by looking at the tree species that are growing alongside, on the what was the shoreline, and now they're underwater, or they were growing there and now the water is so far below where it used to be. So you can actually see it in real time from the type of vegetation that's growing around those lakes as well.
Yeah, I was thinking about from another perspective of somebody who fishes for muskie, the piers. the piers get extended out, and then suddenly they, a couple of years later, they're pulled back in because the water levels are higher.
Yeah.
And they, go ahead.
Yeah. We're really known for walleye in the Minocqua area for the Minocqua chain, and that has been we've had a walleye moratorium. We had a walleye moratorium for almost like 8-9 years, and you know they're still trying to figure out why our walleye species are not reproducing. But you know the climate crisis certainly plays a part in that as well. We are becoming more well known for bass as a resilient fish, and so we got a great bass fishery up here. If you want to, you know, speaking of docks, if you want, you want to fish, that's where you go. You fish on these somebody's dock.
I usually go a little further north of you for muskies. So I drive through Minocqua on my way somewhere else. I'm going to go
Muskie's Brewer Junction, one of them, because that's the muskie capital of the world.
Yeah, that has come into my mind. And as the Boulder Junction area, I've used those lakes many a time for muskie fishing. I'm wondering about increases. You know, we've got increased humidity. We've got on the one hand, and then we've got wildfires and how those might possibly affect tourism. Did Natalie or Austin, did you guys, that was part of your work, was it not? Natalie, maybe?
Sure, I can take that one. Yeah, so for our report that we published it's been a couple years ago now, we were doing kind of a broad overview of how we think climate change is going to impact the state. And so, of course, wildfire factors into that. And I can say more anecdotally, in conversations that we've had with folks at conferences recently, air quality has come up sort of because of wildfires and that effect that it has on folks who are participating in outdoor recreation. There's a lot of work going on around wildfire to understand sort of how that is going to change in Wisconsin, which I'm not an expert in, but I can see, of course, even just for myself, being up in Superior, we've been affected by wildfires several years in the last, since I've lived here. And I know it affects sort of how I feel when I go outside. And so, of course, that's something that we're thinking about as we look to the future.
And I also wondered about any threats or anything you've done relating to pests and maybe an invasive species to both our waterways and forests.
Yeah, again, there's a lot more work that we can do in this area. I think as we're seeing climate change impacting sort of ecosystem and sort of climate generally, we're seeing changes in species range. And so that, of course, is concerning. Also, with less deep freezes, maybe more ticks and mosquitoes. I know that's happened in the last couple of years. I think we had a mosquito bumper crop or something that I saw an article about, which was pretty horrible. But yeah, of course, those kinds of things are concerning too.
Yeah. Crystal, are you doing anything there in that regard in your area?
Trying to kill as many mosquitoes as possible. Is that what you're asking?
Or bring in more bats or...
Well, it's interesting that you brought up wildfires, Larry, because my wife and I are avid backcountry paddlers, and we actually had to change our plans this year because the wildfires in Canada affected where we were paddling. And so, you know, we were seeing that smoke, from the Canadian wildfires all the way down here, and that was impacting people's health, impacting our travelers, in their ability to get outside. So, I find that whole conversation interesting, how much those wildfires in other countries can impact us here in our travel. But yeah, we're definitely seeing a bumper crop in ticks. The Lyme's disease and all tick-borne illnesses are on the rise here in the Northwoods. So if you're traveling with your pets, that's something to think about, making sure that you've got them on a preventative, and even that sometimes isn't good enough. So, you know, we're all accustomed to that tick-borne illness. And honestly, we have a Lyme's disease study center here in the Lakeland area. And so it's definitely something that's concerning for all of us.
Yeah. Megan emailed us. She's been a Lake Michigan swimmer her whole life, and in the past few years has noticed a drastic increase in beach closures, cladophora and chocolate milk-like waters. That's something, and you're kind of nodding, Natalie, there, something you guys have looked at.
Yeah, or sort of in the process of looking at. We know that Lake Superior is seeing more algal blooms, and that is, again, not exactly my area of expertise, but climate change is seen as sort of a driver of that, as well as other issues related to land use and that kind of thing, and more extreme weather as well with heavier rainfalls. And so, yeah, it is definitely a concern and something that we're thinking about how to communicate to the public and also not causing too much alarm. But as Crystal said, it can be danger to pets and human health. And so we want to make sure people are staying safe while also being able to recreate outside. So
yeah, sure. Megan had added that she's worried about the future of the lakes and beaches, wondering how climate change plays a role here alongside the impacts of invasive species and environmental runoff. What are communities doing or can do to preserve their beautiful beaches? I don't know. Crystal, anything that come your way relating to that in your neck of the woods?
You know, we haven't had any real issues with beaches other than trying to figure out how to keep goose poop off of it. First issue, and then anything related to goose poop being in the water. We have a large goose population that loves to fly through our area. Obviously, we're the Lakeland area, so that's been our biggest issue as of right now. But like I said, you know, we've got those blue green algae blooms that keep popping up, rearing their ugly heads in different locations. But our lake systems, for the most part, have been particularly healthy. We see a high level of like milfoil and purple loosestrife and, you know, all of those, you know, all those invasives that come via boat or, you know, construction equipment. I'm still, fighting Japanese knotweed on my property here at the Visitors Bureau. So we definitely are seeing increases in invasive species in our lakes, but we don't have beach issues so much at this point. But you know, stand by. Who knows what's going to come in the next year or two?
Jeff in an email is wondering: are there specific outdoor activities that could grow or be added to our state due to climate change? Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I guess I could take this is, again, something we haven't studied or really looked into, but we knew that based on some of the interviews and talking with other people that are at a recent conference or kind of working on these same issues, are some of those sports that can be done when maybe not the best weather, so maybe not perfect snow. Maybe you could do it in the mud, as Crystal so lovingly called an expanded mud season. So some of those like fat tire biking, hiking, mountain biking, right? Some of our nice topography in the southern regions could be used for mountain biking. And then snowshoeing, right? Snowshoeing versus, you know, cross-country skiing. Snowshoeing you don't need as good of snow for. And so I think some of those activities that don't need those perfect conditions. So.
Yeah, I was. You mentioned snowshoeing. My snowshoes completely did not get used at all last year. And so at least this year, it looks like I'm going to be able to get a little use out of them. Although with the weather coming, I'm going to have to go toward Crystal to get some more action in that area. How should the, you know what, before I ask that question, I got a reminder here for everybody that we are talking about the climate impacts on Wisconsin recreation, and we'll be looking at air travel coming up at noon today, etiquette for air travel with another guest. But right now, visiting with three guests, Natalie Chan, Austin Holland, and Crystal Westfall, and taking your questions. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You could email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News as we look at climate impacts on Wisconsin recreation with our three guests today. And we'll take some calls. Don in Eagle River will go to you now. Thank you for calling, Don.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I live in the North Woods. I've been involved up there for over 30 years. I'm in the Eagle River area, obviously. And I just want to make a comment. It seems, yes, there are definitely impacts due to climate change we're seeing over the past 30 years. But I've really seen almost a deterioration of activity up there. There are many more snowmobilers on these trails, making it much more dangerous. We've got ice tournaments, fishing tournaments during the summers that are high density fishing. We've got wake boats that are infiltrating our lakes up there now. We've got the UTB trails now that are virtually everywhere and even on the roads. It just seems like we're reveling in growth up there. A Popeyes put in Minocqua was on the news. Like, that's a good thing. And I just think that as we're studying these changes and we're looking for alternatives, I think we've got to be really careful of what we're doing to the North Woods. In 30 years, what has changed? What's it going to look like in another 30? If we want it to look like the Dells and be like the Dells, then, shame on us. But it is getting, it's almost as if the restrictions are being lessened and we're getting more people and more deterioration of what the North Woods actually is.
Yeah, Don, thank you very much for calling. Well, I'll get comments, I guess. Crystal, since Don's in your neck of the woods, I'll let you start and then maybe have Austin or Natalie chime in.
Yeah, I mean, Don makes a fair point. We've always been known as an outdoor recreation hub. But since COVID, we have seen just an explosion of travel and tourism to our North Woods areas. It is a perfect storm. There's some considerations that need to be made when we talk about travel and tourism and how that's going to impact our local way of life. The end all be all is people want to be there and they tell their friends, and in the age of digital communication and things going viral and social media, it's real hard for us to control the narrative. And so we are very concerned about sort of overloving our outdoor recreation opportunities here, because we are seeing such an impact on our trail systems, and particularly in motorized sports, we're seeing such a big growth, like he said, in ATV, UTV usage. That's a new thing on the landscape that's been just growing leaps and bounds. I think just we're finding a whole new generation of people that are loving on us, and hopefully they adapt to the way that we hope they adapt to us, and care for the land the same way we do.
Yeah. Well, as you were talking, I was thinking, their government could play a role in this, at least in, if you think about spread of, in ways that might be detrimental, be it zoning or some other issues at the government level, to kind of not necessarily stop people from coming, but be sure to care for the areas that are pristine, or you want to make sure they're still there for everybody to enjoy.
And there's definitely examples out there. Hawaii, most notably, is one of them. They're being overrun for the area that they are, and there's some government, destination marketing, community minded, like the entities, like three tiers working together to make sure that the island isn't being overrun, that it's not being damaged, that invasives aren't being brought in. So there's a whole conversation around kind of over tourism and what that looks like and how that could be impactful to our areas. But when we talk about, we're a climate haven, and those things kind of also scare me as a local, because I think, oh my gosh, are people going to run to us now and say, well, we need to live here, and this is the place to be. So I also have those fears as a local, right? We don't want to be overrun. We don't want to have our natural resources gobbled up and used and abused. So he makes a very fair point in this, you know, and we hope that that everybody really does take to heart the fact that we have people that look here year round and care for this area.
You know, Chris, I want to give Patricia and Antigo a chance to join in. She's been waiting a bit. Patricia, what's your comment?
Well, I'm in North Central here in Langlade County, the County of Trails, and they're all in on snowmobile trails. Like, because I went to the county budget meeting, and they're going to maintain the snowmobile trails, which seems a little odd to me because they never opened 2 years ago, and I think they were open for a week last year. And this year, of course, is better, but you know, part of the issue with the climate change that's been caused by the fossil fuel industry is it's unpredictable. It's like this month, you know, it was 14 below zero, then it's going to be 35 degrees, and none of that's good for the snow. You can't make snow on snowmobile trails. That's just not an option. And I'm a user, a non-motorized user, so I can ski. But they're opening the snowmobile trails in Oneida County on Friday with 6 inches of snow. I don't see how that's going to be good for the environment, for the area under the snow.
Yeah. Austin, you want to comment?
Yeah, I think that kind of ties into the other comment. Yeah, and I would say this is just a really interesting phenomenon that's happened since COVID. It's the global issue of people, you know, going, it was prevalent in our interviews too, of just people kind of rediscovering or discovering outdoor recreation for the first time and wanting to be out on the trails and recreate. I think it's really challenging to make some of these decisions, I think, on when to open or close, you know, certain trails and et cetera. But I think the biggest issue with climate change and that we saw in our study and that we've been talking with people and anecdotally or other professionals in the field is that it's a volatility that's really, really throwing people off in terms of the beginning season and the end season, where it's, you know, we used to open this during this period and now we can't anymore, or it looks like it's going to be a good winter for us to go snowmobiling, for example, and then it changes within the next, you know, few days. So I think trying to understand and adapt to those changes, I think, is going to be the biggest challenge of as we move forward and recreation looks a little bit differently.
Yeah. How do you see the landscape in 10 or 20 years when it comes to this?
If we all had a crystal ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's some great examples of sort of creativity in the outdoor recreation industry, even with just last year. I think it was the Glide, the outdoor ice skating ribbon that opened in Boulder Junction, and just saw massive interest and participation. And I think folks in the tourism and outdoor recreation industry really are very creative and resilient, as Crystal mentioned earlier also. And so I think, as we were talking about earlier, just there are opportunities for transformation. So I'm really curious to see what happens in the next 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, I just to jump off that, I agree completely with Natalie. I think in our interviews, we're talking about climate change with our participants, and they were extremely optimistic about the future. And because, you know, these business owners are very innovative, right? Entrepreneurial. That's why they're in this business and we're in our business. And I think it'll be really interesting to see how they kind of adjust. I think it's going to look different, but I don't know what that's going to look like. But like Natalie said, there's a bunch of creative things going on. And so we can help each other. Different regions across the state adapt. And I think we can be, you know, have a bright future.
Well, I want to thank the three of you for being with us today. It was interesting and fun for me to talk with you. And I hope we have a chance to do this again, maybe when that next report comes out. It'd be great, really great to talk about it. Natalie Chin and Austin Holland and Crystal Westfall, our three guests. And we'll be back and take a look at air travel etiquette right after the news.